I am looking at the Fisker website. I think these discounts are amazing. I should get one. But the configurator, the resolution of the Fisker Ocean in the configurator as you rotate it is so terrible that this company, I can tell you, is doomed. I think that, Ed, you should compare companies.
Oh, my God. So apparently this is Alex's crystal ball, is to go to configurator of any EV company. And if the resolution is poor, it will fail.
Hello and welcome to the Autonicast. I'm Ed Niedermeyer. I'm the author of Ludicrous, the Unvarnished Story of Tesla Motors.
And I'm Kirsten Korosek, transportation editor at TechCrunch.
And I'm Alex Roy, founder of the Human Driving Association and principal at Johnson & Roy Advisors, the finest consultancy in transportation. And AI and robotics.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Throw in all the buzzwords, Alex. There you go. Shall we talk about some, I don't know, dumpster fires in the transportation world? Let's have some fun. So, Alex, how much Tesla stock do you own?
Yeah, Alex.
About $832.
Clearly, you're compromised. Clearly a deeply compromised member of the show.
I'm down $300.
As long time fans, I forgot about it. And investors in Tesla know the rules, which is that if you have any form of you know, financial position related to this, everything you say is just like instantly, oh wait, no, that only works if you're short. Doesn't work if you're long. I forgot how the rules work. It's been a while.
I have learned about scheduling Tesla service in Arizona. It's a peculiar thing.
And wait, hold on. You just said those words, and yet this is, you're talking about a company that you've invested any amount of money in.
Hey, look.
And what does peculiar mean?
So if you make an appointment for insignificant service, in my case, I have a I hit a tire on the highway, voltage battery.
Need to replace the drive.
No. I hit a tire on the highway, and the front bumper, front left ultrasonic, got knocked out. It's the loose, functional, but loose inside the bumper. And I also got a rock in the windshield embedded in the windshield wiper, and I turned the wiper on, and it made a nice curved scratch of the windshield. And so I went to, what's it called? I went to the Geico recommended insurance place for an inspection, and I got it. And they're like, great. And I'm like all excited. And then I went back for my appointment, and the same place that Geico recommended, that is a Tesla estimate authorized place, says to me, oh, we don't actually do the work. We just give you the estimate. You gotta go somewhere else. So I called Geico, and they said half an hour later that no one will service his car except one place in Glendale, which is northwest of me, like half an hour. I'm like, that's really inconvenient. There's like body shops everywhere. There's a body shop right next to the Tesla store with hundreds of Teslas. So I just went in there. I'm like, can I do this? They're like, well, Geico, we don't work with Geico. I'm like, I don't understand what's happening. And so then I made another appointment using the app. This is my fourth Tesla. I've had 6 years of great experience. But then I made an appointment in the app to just have a guy come to my house and look at the car, figuring I'll do all this inside the Tesla app, just in Tesla lifestyle. And so I made an appointment. The guy's like, yeah, Tesla's like, yep, we'll send someone to your house. They'll be there at like 7 a.m. It'll be great. And so the day before, I got a message from the tech himself saying, oh, well, we can narrow down the window if you confirm your appointment for tomorrow. I'm like, confirmed. Please narrow down the window. And the next morning, like at like 6 a.m., because they were scheduled to come at like 7. At 6 a.m., I wake up and I look at the app. And without telling me, the appointment's been moved to in-person at the store. So that's awkward. If this was a relationship, if this was like a relationship with a person, I would break up with them.
Okay, so Alex, you understand also, if this automaker were worth more than the rest of the industry combined, I would sell my stock in it.
Okay, I can tell you this, despite these quibbles,
I would still love my Tesla.
I would still take the Tesla ownership experience over that of any other vehicle I've ever owned. And
including a Morgan Morgan three wheeler, a vintage Porsche, a Citroen, vintage Citroen. Context and the BMW. Is so important here.
On a related note, my friend who shall remain nameless in Miami took delivery of a Cybertruck recently, and he is a big Tesla fanboy, and I love him, and he's a good guy. He sent me a text message. I'm going to read it to you. You might have to. We have to bleep this out. Here's the message.
We checked the explicit lyrics box. Okay. Yeah.
So remarkable that the Tesla hating press is not shitting on Cybertruck for not having autopilot and requiring the purchase of FSD, which isn't even enabled.
Listen, people are shitting on the Cybertruck in all kinds of ways. There's no shortage.
Just not in that area.
There's a lot to unpack there. But the next message from him is, just did first road trip and I had to remind myself over and over to steer. So we have some skill decrement. Let's get Missy Cummings in the show. And then he says, what the hell is the holdup? They've had 4 years. But wait, there's one more. Wait, I got one more message from him.
Okay, one more.
I'm done. Here we go. I've been calling Foundation Series Elon's dealer markup. Okay, and welcome to the Atonicast.
Yes. So this all is just so the perfect bridge, if you will, to the dumpster fire that is actually all of EVs right now. Tesla's not the only one, just the most successful of the bunch. Whereas some of the other EV startups somehow have even worse problems than the ones that Alex just described.
The ones that are trying to be the company that Alex just described are having troubles even reaching that questionable standard, right? And there's so much. Okay, but listen, you know, you guys are sort of both notorious haters, whereas I'm a really positive, optimistic person. I'd love to start because there's a lot of bad news in the EV sector. So I personally, it's important to me that we start on like a positive, optimistic note here and not just always be like hating and doom and gloom the way you two, just constantly are. So there's good news. Lucid got $1 billion. I mean, in this environment, I'm sure haters are going to point out that, you know, there may be some sunk cost fallacy at work here, but whatever, you know, you raise $1 billion in this environment. This is probably gonna be one of the biggest deals in mobility tech this year.
I'm rooting for Lucid. Have you seen the Gravity? Have you seen how cool that is? The Gravity?
Well,
not in person.
No.
I've seen it in person. And Kirsten?
I haven't seen it in person, but here's the thing. Lucid has attracted another $1 billion of investment from Saudi Arabia, which now owns 60% of the company. So there's that. And they have slashed the prices of their vehicles, and they're still off.
Should I make a bone saw joke here? Or?
Too soon?
Okay.
So they also have slashed the prices of their vehicles of their Air, which is the only vehicle they have. They have various trims of it, and they're still a ways off before Gravity. So it's like, this to me just seems like they're just buying some time, and it's not even clear if you look at like the order deal that they have with Saudi Arabia to deliver all these vehicles. I think it's like 100,000 vehicles. I think the terms of that aren't great either. So they're in a better position than Fisker and Canoe and Arrival, but that's not saying a lot. They're still existing and they have a fresh injection of cash. $1 billion. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Are you going to say something positive now, Edward?
I thought I did. I mean,
they got money.
They've got money. They're raising money in this environment. It's a hard thing to do. Good for them.
Let me say this. At the Fashion Square Mall in Scottsdale, Arizona, a few blocks from where I live, there's an Apple store where I ride my wonderful electric e-bike.
Not a sponsor of the show. Just want to be clear.
I love it. It's a transformative mode and product. And I go there, you know, almost every day for coffee just to walk around and get some exercise. And there is a Lucid store 50 feet from the Apple store. And they had a Gravity in there. And it people were going crazy. I am so rooting for Lucid because Rivian can't be the only EV startup that makes it after Tesla. We need more examples. We need a competition. And we need competition that's American. We do.
Well,
so if you've been following the BYD story.
I mean, hey, it would be great. It would be great if so here's what I'll say about Lucid. Like, I've driven their vehicles. I did have an incident with Lucid Air a while ago, now 2 years ago, where it went into limp mode.
things happen.
But I would say overall, the vehicle does the things that some of these other companies, Fisker, for instance, hasn't figured out how to do. Lucid's vehicles work. They don't, their hoods don't fly off. They don't roll away.
They have really impressive drivetrain technology. I mean,
and they do.
I mean, Lucid is the one company that finally got Elon Musk to be like, well, you only need so much range because Lucid beat them.
Right. Exactly. So, I think that they're doing a lot of correct things and it's really going to come down to, you know, they have one vehicle that was expensive, that was a sedan, and that's hard. Whereas Rivian really nailed the lifestyle and the branding. And I think there were more people with money who identified with that than the kind of like, you know, older person sedan look. And so that's kind of hurting Lucid right now. But if they can withstand this, you know, next challenge and get the Gravity out, I think that they have a chance. And they're not, don't seem to operationally have the same issues that some of these other EV startups, many of whom or which went public via SPACs, mergers, and many of which no longer exist or in bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And almost all of them.
Yeah. But they also, and I think one, you know, one of the key factors is that a lot of them don't have that sort of like major strategic investor who, you know, has deep pockets and doesn't want to watch their investment, you know, potentially go under. That I think with Rivian, you know, you have a little bit of that risk there of like, you know, if things get tough for them and the path to getting, you know, scaling the R2 and the R3, you know, gets bumpy, who steps in to protect that? You know, they don't have that kind of big strategic player. Now, you have a great quote, Kirsten, in your TechCrunch story about that. Well, it's not your story, but Sean O'Kane's story. Yeah.
Sean is really just an extension of me, right?
From Financial Times. Yeah. That the quote they got was from, used was from the Financial Times here that really captures, I think, the sort of two-edged sword of the position that Lucid's in, right? Which is that the CEO, Peter Rawlinson, said, like, if I adopt the mindset that there's bottomless wealth from the Saudi PIF, Public Investment Fund, that's very dangerous. That's something I'll never do. I think this is like the thing that all the EV startups, who, you know, whether you have a big backer like this or not, like, we've been in this transition from this like hype happy, you know, start a flow to EV stock and everyone buys it kind of world is getting to a place really, really fast where you have to just, you know, build an actual business that.
Well, he said that quote and then like a few weeks later took the $1 billion. So, you know, and we got pushback for including that, by the way. Lucid wasn't too excited about us using that, but it's the reality. Like, yeah. Well, yeah. You know.
Well, no, and I mean, I think that's right. Like, the, you know, when you take money at this stage in a company, you know, from a big investor, like you know, part of the promise has to be that you're using that money to fix the problems that you have and as to get to a point where you're not going to need to keep asking for money. So,
yeah,
right? And like that's yeah.
So,
like, Rivian has that challenge too. All these companies have that challenge, but
yeah, they do. And like, Rivian has a challenge, but Rivian and Lucid have money.
Yeah.
And they do have people buying their vehicles. And they, on top of it, don't have like multiple federal agencies investigating them and things like that, which leads me to Fisker.
Oh boy.
So Fisker, Sean O'Kane, the senior reporter at TechCrunch, is all over Fisker and has been reporting a lot about this. And it's so much has happened. You know, it reminds me of other companies that I've reported on over the years or big events where you're like, ooh, this could go either way. And then suddenly the spiral doesn't just happen. It happens in days, not months. And that's what's happening over at Fisker right now. The long story short is they multiple federal investigations, real big quality problems with the vehicles. which we've done reports and investigations on. And then on top of that, some high profile internet reviews that haven't helped. But then also just total turmoil on the service side. They've completely pivoted their business model to away from direct sales and working with dealerships. And one dealer has already pulled out of that within
only,
a couple of weeks.
Only one?
So far that we know of. And it was like a major dealer group. I think that's just the beginning. They supposedly had an automaker who was going to bail them out, and they were going to go for $150 million in convertible notes. But the closing condition of that money was that they landed that deal with the automaker, which is reportedly was Nissan, and that fell apart. No money.
And by the way, $150 million. I mean, this is like, you know, scrounging convertible loans. This is scrounging to put a little bit of fuel in the tank versus, you know, $1 billion at Lucid, which is really going to take them, you know, a number of years.
So runway. two days after. So it's only been a couple of days since that deal fell apart. And since then, Fisker stock dropped 28%. Trading was halted. And then the New York Stock Exchange said, actually, no, we're suspending trading on you. You cannot be on the exchange anymore. All of our sources are telling us that it is complete chaos over there. And then Sean has an investigation that will be going out by the time this is published, that it is so internally, it is such a shit show with financials that they temporarily lost and then later found millions of dollars worth of customer payments, like checks from vehicle sales, including which triggered internal audits and then an outside party audit. So
and by the way, who's the CFO of Fisker? The chief financial officer?
Gita.
Isn't it Heinrich Fisker's wife?
Yes.
No, it isn't.
Yes.
It is.
Yeah. And that's a whole other story. And but things are evolving and things are evolving rapidly.
And hang on.
It appears.
You left out the best part, though. What? That the news that just happened today as we're recording, which is that they cut the price of their vehicle.
They slashed the price. Yes.
50%.
So existing Ocean customers, the few unlucky few that are out there, can pretty much kiss any resale value goodbye. This is desperation in the highest form. And we're getting right now word live here that maybe they're also potentially getting kicked out of their headquarters right now. Like right now.
So basically, aren't you ganging up on them?
There is a lot going on. And you know, the thing that it's too bad is that the design of the Fisker Ocean is decent and fine. And it is actually an appealing vehicle to look at. But if this is not another lesson, being a successful car manufacturer and seller of cars does not come down to the design alone. You can't just design a nice looking car. It needs to function. You need to have a functioning service department. You need to have organization and taking payments. And so that you can realize that revenue, like, you know, these are all the basic
Elon
things.
Is awesome. So Elon is actually a genius.
Well,
Alex, I don't know. Like
everybody in the EV space right now is pointing at Fisker and being like, hey, it could be worse, right?
It could be VinFast.
In the EV space has challenges. Honestly, I think VinFast is much better situated than VinFast has a huge industrial conglomerate behind them.
I gotta say something really important, my friends. I am looking at the Fisker website. I think these discounts are amazing. I should get one. But the configurator, the resolution of the Fisker Ocean in the configurator as you rotate it is so terrible that this company, I can tell you, is doomed. I think that, Ed, you should compare companies.
Oh my God. So apparently this is Alex's crystal ball, is to go to configurator of any EV company. And if the resolution is poor, it will fail. This have is the litmus seen test.
How beautiful the Lucid configurator is. I mean, like, like it is a work.
Lucid
of
also
art.
Has not had their stock delisted, you know, minor I mean, comparative advantages.
Someone with exceptional taste. What's the name of the gentleman who's the designer of the interior designer?
Derek.
Derek. It looks. Okay, the head design. So if you look at the configurator of the Lucid website, it's as if Derek personally took interest in making sure it's as beautiful and elegant as the cars themselves. And by the way, I have no professional relationship with Lucid either.
Yeah,
none.
Sounds like you're really boosting them.
I don't own any stock.
Do you own any stock in Lucid?
No,
do you
I don't. Own
any? How's your Fisker portfolio looking? No, but actually, there's a really interesting question here. So I've not driven a Fisker Ocean, sadly, but it is. I assume a connected vehicle, right? Like the way all sort of modern EVs are. So I'm wondering, and I guess we probably don't have an exact answer for like which is one of the uncertainties here of like what happens if this company goes bankrupt, right? Like, so like Van Moof was like an internet connected bike company that went bankrupt, which is still like a bizarre sentence to even say. I feel like I'm having a stroke every time I say the words internet connected bike. But you know, when they went under, someone else another company sort of stood up servers so that the bikes would keep working. With Fisker, okay, so they're offering a 50% discount on their vehicles right now. To me, the question is that an appropriate discount for the risk that this company will simply stop existing?
No.
And like essentially when those servers go down, you just will – there'll be nothing you can do to make this car work again.
I can tell you what would be amazing. If Fisker, the man, was a real visionary, he would just open up all the code for the Fisker, keep the prices at 25K, and let anybody do whatever they want with the code.
Oh, my God.
So,
open source car.
Yeah.
So here's the other unfortunate thing. Henrik Fisker has been here before.
Yeah,
this is not his first failed rodeo.
Henrik
Fisker's been kicked
like,
off the bull. He
actually,
has been
this is
the
my
bowl
second
before.
Rodeo.
Yeah. And it seems like many of the same mistakes that he made are being made again. Are like just actually, but even in a more high profile and bigger way. Karma, if we recall, like there were some things a little bit outside of their control in that failure, although they did get 100% crushed by like terrible software. Their write-ups at the time were famous of the first vehicle, the Karma. But that company ultimately failed, and I remember interviewing him at the time. I was at Fortune. It was maybe about 6 months to a year after he had sort of the wounds had started to heal a little bit. And he's like, I learned, you know, a lot from that. And now I'm going to do these other things. Fisker, the company we know now, was yet to become an entity, but he had clearly rebounded from that. I guess that's the benefit of having a healthy ego. I don't know, but he did not learn. There were some real key things. Specifically, it's not just about the design of the vehicle that makes a successful car company. And it just sounds like complete chaos. We've talked to dozens of people who formerly or currently work at the company, and it just seems like insanity there.
I mean, I don't know how people thought this was going to play out. I mean, I don't know. Like the strange part about all this for me is like
optimism, you know. Like,
oh no, I know.
A
but
cool
I mean,
design, like maybe we can make it happen. Like I think a year ago, that was the feeling. It just that it is, as I noted in my newsletter, the wheels have been coming off the bus and fast, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just saying, like you know, making cars is hard, and like you know, all these sorts of things. I mean, these are things we've been talking about on this show since what. You know, 2015, 16, since we started, right? Like it's just fascinating to me how, you know, so much money can have been plowed into this idea that like we need to create brand new car companies. And you know, we're having to learn, quote unquote, learn these lessons that were like quite foreseeable 5 years ago when everyone, you know, was still bidding up these valuations. But now everyone's like, it's all just so obvious, right? It's all so obvious. Well, it's like, it needs to be more obvious before you put the billions of dollars in. Like, that's the key to this.
Yeah, I mean, no one loves a charismatic founder with a big idea more, you know, than it seems like the VC and, you know, financial institution community. And like this whole idea of backing the charismatic leader, again, like we're recycling history here. It doesn't always work. It rarely works, but they see one example and they're like, yeah, it'll work every time. And so, it just doesn't.
Yeah. No, and then maybe we need to see, like maybe people need to see, right? It's a good point, right? Like you can say abstractly, this makes sense, but you have to see it to believe it sometimes. And I think one of the interesting things that we haven't really seen before that I'm curious, I mean, I think we're going to see it, or we're already seeing it, is this scenario of a car that loses its company that made it, which means it loses its connected servers, which means the car literally doesn't work anymore. For me, this is like one of the core delusions that like underpin this entire last like decade or so, is that like the idea that, oh, you need to make a car more like a smartphone, which is what has fueled this whole, you know, thing of making it connected. Well, at the end of the day, there's something about cars that really people want them to be unconnected. Like the way we think about cars, right? We buy SUVs and trucks so we don't even have to drive on a road if we don't need to. Like we're allergic to having our cars be pinned down and constrained. We want them to stand on their own and be their own thing. And I think maybe seeing people buy a car from a company that then goes under, and then that literally their car is just bricked and cannot work anymore because the servers aren't being maintained. Like maybe that will sort of clarify like, oh, on a very deep level, there's something very, very different between cars as a product category and smartphones.
Well, you know, it's really going to clarify. Kirsten, are you going to bring up GM?
Well, you can bring up GM, but actually, speaking of GM, I do want to pull on the thread that Ed was just had started. So the other day, I was just driving down the freeway and I looked and I saw an old Saturn driving by me. And I thought about that. And I was like, oh, I haven't seen a Saturn in a long time. And obviously they're not making Saturns anymore, but there are still people who own these and drive them around and they function, you know, maybe barely, but the mechanics are there and they work and it works. And we're in an era now of the connected car where that actually shouldn't be assumed anymore. And the whole analogy with the smartphone on wheels, it's like everyone thinks that they're talking about Apple. Well, this car isn't an Apple, you know? I mean, like many of these companies are going to fade away, and also they change ownership. There's a lot of power moves that shift, and not every automaker is going to exist. It's going to be looking a little different a decade from now. So I think that we haven't fully seen or experienced actually what we bought into yet. Like that will come to pass over the next 5 to 10 years when people can't sell their vehicle, can't support their vehicle. I mean, I think that's going to happen for a lot of folks. Or like a phone, it's not updatable anymore. Like it doesn't have the hardware to support the compute it needs for the basic functions. And so like who supports that? You know what I mean?
An iPhone,
you go buy a new iPhone, you know, like what if you want to hold on to your car for 15 years? You know, you don't hold on to an iPhone for 15 years. Okay, I'm done.
Here's what I think is going to happen. I think that only a handful of Tesla for sure, probably Rivian and Lucid will survive as new EV startups and no one else will. Because imagine going back in time to 1970 and being someone like my dad is like looking at a Maserati Merak, maybe a Citroen SM, and thinking to himself, who's going to service this thing? But at least there was a company overseas that existed. Citroen existed as a you know, wasn't a going concern. So you're looking at a new EV today. If you're a Lucid or Rivian person, you could probably afford to take a bath on that car. But if you're a civilian and you want to look at an EV that's under 50, like a Fisker, you'd have to be stupid or crazy to buy one. I'm sorry. Like, it's an opinion show. Well, I think that's my opinion. Like,
Well, here's the thing. I think it's absolutely irresponsible of Fisker, knowing the position that it's in, to be trying to sell these vehicles for $24,000, quite frankly. Like, I get the reason why they're doing it. They're desperate. They want money. But that's not going to save them. Like, offloading these vehicles that can't be serviced and have all these problems is not going to save them right now. Like, if they have what, about, based on the last accounting we had, they're sitting on almost 5,000 vehicles in their inventory that they can't get rid of. If they sell every single one of those for $24,000, I don't know if that saves them. I don't know if that buys them time. But what it does do is create a lot of problems for consumers.
Yeah, and that's what's really interesting here, right? Like, there's been so much focus. I mean, there's been so much focus on the stock, right, of Tesla and all these other companies, right, and the sort of hype and going up, and then now, you know, struggling to maintain these valuations and deliver on them. What's fascinating, and we've seen throughout this whole era of the EV startups, this fascinating like intermingling of people buying these cars, but also investing in these companies, and this sort of weird intermingling of like consumer culture and investment sort of capitalist sort of culture, and it's just, it's all really fascinating. One of the things I wouldn't have necessarily predicted, but seems to be the case, is that like the risk and the volatility of this whole complex. Some of that's obviously in the stock price, right? Like, we got Fisker being delisted and all, and, you know, Tesla stock has been struggling. Although I guess the last few days is up for some reason. I'm not sure I understand why. But
great, great company.
Talk about Tesla. We'll get to Tesla. It's on the list. But, but what's happening though, no, is the value of the cars is what's crashing. People like this mingling of making a purchase and making an investment is playing out in this weird way where it turns out your car was an investment. And so like you have these weird phenomena where like the Cybertruck, right? A lot of the people who are getting early delivery of the Cybertruck were doing it to flip it. Well, you know, we had a Cybertruck fail to make the reserve. We had a video on YouTube the other day of AutoZone or AutoNation offering like $70,000 essentially, $75,000 as their buy it now price for a Cybertruck. Like, you know, even just, not that long ago, a Rivian R1T, R1S, like those were going well over MSRP for a year after they started coming out. And with Tesla, it's always been the case. The whole EV flipping market has died. And now, with Hertz dumping the Model 3, even the more affordable Teslas, the values are crashing. Tyson Jomny has a piece in Automotive News where in the last 15 months, Tesla's, the value, average transaction price of a Tesla, this is new sales, has gone from $70,000 to like, what, 46 or something
46?
Like that?
46, yeah.
In 15 months. And so it's fascinating. It's not just the stock that's showing this volatility, it's the price. And it creates a totally like when has this existed in the car market before? The speculative bubble, not just in the stock, but in the vehicles themselves that is now unwinding and sticking people with, you know, assets that are going to be devaluating anyway, but are doing it at this like insane rate. And where do you find the bottom?
And also, these were vehicles that were quite expensive and out of a lot of people's reach and suddenly are kind of in reach for many more people. The Tesla example is interesting, that piece by Tyson, because it gets to something that we've brought up a lot of time, many, many times actually, which is Tesla is in a somewhat better position, and it helps you understand why they push their software, their FSD software, so much, because it's another way to realize revenue.
It's not another way, Kirsten. It's the only way. So Tesla has just made it. Elon Musk just announced that, like, if you're picking up delivery of a new Tesla, that like the employees at the sales point of sale, whatever, are required to give you a demo of a full self-driving beta, like. Am I crazy? This is an act of desperation, right? Like there are no other levers, right? Their average transaction prices are going down. their profit margins are going down. Their sales are sort of holding-ish, but like all of the pressure is clearly downward. There's really not much he can do to stimulate demand for these vehicles besides hyping up full self-driving. But I'm sorry, Alex, and you're the sort of consumer experience, I would say, guru among us. Like, do you think that people who have already, by the way, who have already in some cases paid for their new car, they're just going to pick it up, is forcing them to sit through a demo of a self-driving system where the Tesla employees like, see, the car is driving itself, even though, you know, you're legally responsible for it. Like, is that going to do anything for this company?
Well, that's what I think is going to be really interesting is I would love to go in. In fact, Alex, since you're such a Tesla stan, you got to go in and like shop for a new Tesla and see how they talk about FSD. Get the demo. Because I want to hear the language they use. Right, I would love to hear that.
I'll do that. However, I can't do it at the Fashion Square Mall Tesla store because I went in there and they all recognized me. I'll go do that. You know, that it is a very – all right. So, you know, Ed, it's a weird thing because it will definitely impede and slow down deliveries. It will. And the people for whom it really will slow down deliveries, my friend Kim, you met Kim years ago, Pulitzer Kim, redhead. She designed our fashion look. I talked to her. She needed a new car a few months ago and was, you know, looking at a Volvo. And I said, check out a Model Y. An hour later, she says, thank you. I've ordered a Model Y. A couple of days later, she calls to thank me because they've delivered it to her house curbside. So in what universe does the guy who delivers the Y curbside to a single mom, is the truck driver going to demonstrate FSD? Like, how many vehicles are being delivered that way? Because that's just not tenable. It's unserious.
And by the way, you know, employees are once again being asked to like sign up for extra shifts for the big delivery push. Like, it just
that's fine,
but like it just goes to show, right? And this is the thing with Tesla is like they're just constantly pulling out all the stops to always make this push. And at some point, right? Like,
some point, we'll all be dead and Tesla will outlive us. And it's a great, despite my experiences, I'd rather go through this. You know, so I haven't owned a Model X with a defective door yet. So maybe I'll walk back this statement. It's been a great ownership experience.
Well, I will say this, that while I do agree that the FSD lever is one of the only levers they have to boost that profit margin or, you know, bring in more revenue, they are in a very different I wouldn't call it a desperate situation yet. Like many of these other EV companies, I think it's in a different category
But it's all relative to expectation, right? So Fisker and Lucid and Rivian, these are all companies that are in a fight for literal survival. With Tesla, they're not, right? Like the wolf is not at the door in the same sense, but you know, the valuation is also just insane. It continues to be absurd, right?
It doesn't matter what the valuation is. The company will survive. Do we agree on that, Ed?
Yeah, but the narrative that they can just keep growing forever, which is where the valuation comes from, that can't. And again, like just like with the value of the cars, right? With the value of the car, when Tesla was hot, you know, people were flipping the cars, selling them for over MSRP, you know, and it was a confidence thing. Everyone had the confidence that demand would always outstrip supply for these vehicles and for the stock. This is why both of these things keep going up. Confidence is a tricky thing though, because once that confidence is lost, what shores it back up? And we see this with the cars, right? And even if Tesla puts out good sales numbers, if they can't stop, you know, their cars with, you know, a couple thousand miles on them selling for $20,000, right? Hertz just flooding the market with used Model 3s and Model Y, or, you know, I guess it's mostly Model 3s. Like, what are they going to do? Like, their profit margins are going to erode to nothing. Then in order to protect their profit margin, they're going to have to accept, okay, we're going to sell fewer cars, but at a viable profit margin. Then they're going to lose it. So they either lose their profitability or they lose their growth. And like no amount of forcing people to sit through a timeshare, you know, hard sell for FSD beta is going to change.
And then the Model 2 will arrive and we'll do an episode about that. What's the next topic?
You can hope and dream. But again, like this is what the Cybertruck was supposed to do, right? Like the Cybertruck was supposed to shore up either the profit margins or the volume, ideally both. And like they put a clown car into the most profitable segment of the global auto industry. Like This is not a serious company and people don't want to accept it, but you know, gravity is gravity. And I've been waiting, been saying this and waiting for a long time. I can keep waiting. Wait,
can we actually move on to like an interesting nugget of new insight?
Sure. What?
Okay, so the other day I downloaded FSD 12 point whatever it is, as if I care, and it was exactly like every other update. It was nominally better in some ways and regressed in some others. And yet, what was amazing was that the driver monitoring system camera, if you put a piece of tape on it, you can put on a pair of dark sunglasses and still use it hands-free. Not safely, but yes. Hands free. And so it's very weird that they just can't solve that. And to be clear, it's not an FSD camera. The driver monitoring camera will let you use autopilot hands free. FSD won't function at all if you have tape over it. Just so we're clear. But it's not a major step forward. And all the hype on Twitter about how amazing it is, it doesn't make a difference. You still got to sit there and watch it. And I was just like, whatever. Don't care. Just don't care.
What? Final thoughts? You don't care.
I just don't care. And it's not, I don't think it's going to make a difference. All these demos, it's not going to make a difference. It's
So Alex, so if Tesla prices, average prices have gone from $70,000 to $45,000 roughly in the last 15 months, what's going to turn that around? Like is it going to be the Cybertruck? Is that going to take off to an extent that turns it around?
When they come out with a Vanagon type vehicle and or Model 2, that's the next event that'll move the needle. Nothing else will. I don't care, Ed, because I don't care about the stock price. I don't care. Tesla's going to make it. No matter what you say, they're going to make it. And
This is the logical rigor that I'm used to hearing from Tesla shareholders.
I didn't sign up to do a show on stock analysis, but you know,
okay. Alex, this is the Autonomcast. If you think we're not fighting about Tesla, you got to get a new show, man.
While we're here, let's bring up something I noticed that we did not put in the topic list, which was the story last week about GM selling data.
Oh, yeah.
To insurance companies. And there was a story about a guy who had a 2021 Corvette. Is that right? Who couldn't get insurance and then discovered that GM had been selling his data to all the insurance companies. And so nobody wanted to insure him. And I just want to bring something up here because this is important. I did not see anyone. And if anyone was smart enough to do it, it would have been Kirsten. Bring up the irony here of connected insurance. So if you have a Tesla and you sign up for Tesla insurance, I looked at it, the quotes were much cheaper for me than Geico. However, you know, if you drive your Tesla after 10 p.m., your insurance goes up. And if you remember the Tesla scoring system that was active yet last year, which was like the filter Tesla used to determine whether or not you could test FSD in the early days. That scoring system disappeared from public view, but it clearly exists behind the scenes as part of the Tesla insurance app. And the Tesla scoring system is no different from anyone else's insurance dongle or anything, because fundamentally, if you brake hard or accelerate hard, you get demerits and you're considered a less safe driver. But what no one has brought up is that all these systems, all the insurance rating systems, if connected to data in that way and shared with the insurance company, are unfair to drivers. And I'll tell you why. If you are accelerating hard and braking hard and have, let's say, excessive steering input all the time, I mean, every time you get in the car, you probably are an unsafe driver, in which case you probably should pay for higher insurance. But if you are someone who was trying to game the Tesla scoring system back in the day, you drove safely all the time, and then a child ran out and you hit the brakes really hard and turned the steering wheel, big time, you save that kid's life. But yet Tesla and any insurance company, they don't have that context because the data that they're seeing does not include camera, radar, like LiDAR data off the car. They actually don't know if you were a great driver with great reflexes who saved a life that day. Now, I don't know if the insurance scoring algorithms are nuanced enough to distinguish between someone who's safe every day and then has one day of like massive input, or if they're just looking at any incident as an unsafe driving example. But in the Tesla case, we know that people were driving mellow all the time and one incident would knock your score off. So I am totally opposed to any of these systems being mandatory.
Well,
totally opposed to companies, GM is the the egregious example here, selling this stuff without without a clear opt-in. And so years ago, and this is my friend, I think you know him, Russell Datz, who previously was VP of marketing of Fisker Automotive back in the day, which like 11, 12 years ago, Russell said to me, the smartest thing I've heard, he said, our cars are going to need a privacy button, like incognito mode off a browser. And it's got to be hard.
This exists in Europe. So long time, like 2016, I wrote about privacy issues in Tesla's and GM. So those are the two sort of most egregious examples. And so GM has had OnStar for a really long time. And like every few years, there's a privacy scandal around it. And people realize, oh, like, you know, they're giving you this free trial to OnStar for 6 months when you buy a new car or a year or whatever. But then it turns out they kind of leave it on and they're collecting your data and selling it. And like every couple of years, people are like, rediscover that this is happening. And Alex, I love that we're kind of full circle here to your experience that we were talking about at the beginning of the show, which is trying to get your car repaired. You're insured by Geico. And by the way, we were talking about this last week and I looked it up and there's clearly something going on with Geico and Arizona Tesla repairs. Like there's something about having Geico coverage of your Tesla in Arizona that's messed up. Tesla's insurance costs have been wildly high for a really, really long time. And again, every few years or fewer, Elon Musk comes out and says, like, we have all this data from our customers. We're going to fix insurance. And everyone's like, oh, that makes sense. You have all of this data from your customers. Of course, they are better positioned to use that data to make insurance smarter and better than literally anybody else, anywhere, ever, at all. And yet, they never have been able to make insurance any better. Tesla owners continue to struggle with getting affordable insurance, getting insurance to pay for repair, all of these things, right? And so, like, that to me is the interesting piece of this is that, like, we could have, like, it's one thing to give up your data for a tangible something, right? For if there's an exchange of value, then people can choose to engage with that or not. But if you're not actually getting value back for giving up your data, you absolutely should be able to have a privacy button. And by the way, that was one of the things back in 2016 that I realized with OnStar legally in Europe, and I don't remember the details now, but they had to offer a privacy mode or a privacy button, I think it is even. And in the US, they simply don't. And I think that that's something that, you know,
people, Americans don't care about privacy, Ed.
I mean, right? Apparently, because we keep like they care about it enough to rediscover that it's a thing every couple of years, but then nothing actually happens to change it. So,
well, on that wonderful note, we have to leave. We didn't even get to another hilarious EV startup.
Oh my God.
Ism, which is which I'll briefly mention, and then we do have to go, but.
Go ahead.
I have work to do, Ed. Arrival, another bankrupt EV startup, actually bankrupt, is going through bankruptcy protection in the UK, sold its assets. And we knew that they sold their assets in January and then again now. But now we know where and who bought it. And who do you think would be just perfectly positioned to buy all these advanced manufacturing equipment is none other than Canoo, another beleaguered EV startup that really has yet to do any scale. It's delivered a few vehicles, including to NASA, that are more like test and pilot vehicles, but has yet to start cranking out any vehicles from its factory. So That is the, I guess, the chef's kiss of this episode.
It's incredible. We had an episode with, I'm forgetting his name from Arrival not that long ago, really right before they started running into trouble.
Avinash.
Yeah, Avinash,
the president.
That's right. Yeah.
Really interesting guy, but you know.
To me, you know, if you listen to that episode, the Arrival's approach to manufacturing was really, really interesting. What I don't understand here is that Canoe has a vehicle that was engineered for a very, you know, more traditional approach to manufacturing. I don't know what Arrival's
manufacturing
tech does for that. You can't just re-engineer the vehicle that Canoe has to be made using these microfactories. Like, it makes no sense to me.
It also makes even less sense when you think about the timeline, which is Canoe is like supposed to be starting this right now. Like, why the pivot to some other random equipment? And they were touting in their press release that this was saving them money. But again, it's not even clear what the equipment is or what the assets are, how they're going to use it. Is this a pivot to how they manufacture? Like, what's happening? So.
And I think
to
Mullen,
me, it's just a mystery.
Mullen is the other company that's been kind of doing the strategy of like, well, you know, they don't really have like compelling, profitable vehicles coming to market. And so they kind of go around buying up all these other little startups that are falling on, you know, desperate times. And I guess the idea is that it bumps their stock or it gives them something worth investing in the long run. But I don't know.
We will see. On that note, wild episode. Thank you for joining us on the AutonomouCast to talk about the EV startup dumpster fire that is currently happening. And see you again next week.